This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to talk about something extremely topical because, as many of you are aware, in the past couple of weeks, the World Health Organization has weighed in on the diet controversy, telling us that processed meat, not only processed meat, but even just good old-fashioned red meat that's not processed, is bad for us. In fact, so bad that they included processed meat in a list of potential carcinogens, along with smoking, along with arsenic. Is processed meat the new cigarette? Well, according to today's guest, au contraire. And it's interesting, I actually booked this guest a couple of months ago, not anticipating the big brouhaha of the World Health Organization. Without further ado, our guest is Tom Naughton. He is a filmmaker, and he's produced a film which you need to see. It's called Fat Head, and the subtitle is "You've been fed a lot of baloney." Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Tom. It's a pleasure having you.
Pleasure to be on. Thanks.
Okay, well, you know, after all, it is the World Health Organization, so that's pretty authoritative. It's the world, it's international, it's about health, and it's a big monolithic organization. So tell me how they could be wrong in making an assessment that processed meat is the source of all our dietary ills.
Well, I'll tell you how wrong they are. They're putting it in the same category as smoking and arsenic. So here's my view on this. You smoke and take arsenic, I will eat red meat, and we'll see who lives longer and feels better.
Okay.
The reason they can be wrong is this was not a scientific decision. It was a political decision. Who is a stepchild of the UN? The UN is on record as being anti-meat because, among other reasons, they think it causes global warming, only they don't call it warming anymore. They call it climate change. They have become very anti-meat for all kinds of reasons, and it does not surprise me that they would pull up the cancer scare as a way to get us to stop eating meat.
In fact, they just made a proposal that they're going to set up what's called a climate justice court at the United Nations, which intends to adjudicate claims by presumably underdeveloped nations that they're being affected by climate change, and there ought to be an income redistribution from more wealthy countries to poorer countries. And presumably part of that agenda will be to get them to plant beans instead of raising cattle for hamburger that they'll then ship to McDonald's.
Yeah, now here's the irony of that. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Alan Savoy, who has shown that when you reintroduce cattle to areas that have become desertified, they actually start growing nice and green again. So, I mean, they're just about as wrong on this as they could be. And, of course, it doesn't surprise me that the UN is largely about income redistribution. And so I said, this all gets down to politics. There's no real health science involved here.
Well, tell us a little bit about the movie. What is Fathead about? And, of course, you know, I urge your listeners to find it, get a hold of it. Of course, it's no longer playing at, you know, your local Cinematheque. But, you know, these days there are a lot of channels by which you can fulfill your viewership needs.
Sure. Fathead actually started out as my comedic reply to Supersize Me, and that is still part of what it's about. But as I was doing research for the film, because I was going to go on my own fast food diet, I wanted to get myself educated about, okay, what is this going to do to me? What are the health effects of the fat and everything else I'm going to eat? And the more research I did, and this is the great thing about living in the internet age, I could do a lot of research in my pajamas with a cup of coffee. I kept coming across more and more evidence that the standard advice we've been given since, I would say, the 70s is just flat out wrong. It was never based on science. So I also went back and then kind of re-educated myself on what makes for good or bad science. And just the more research I did, the madder I got, thinking, wow, here's why I was overweight for all those years and didn't need to be. I was told that the foods that would make me fat were meat and eggs and cheese and things like that. And I was told to eat a lot of healthy whole grains, which I'd been doing, and slowly getting fatter every year. And so Fathead is partly a reply to supersize me, and then it kind of moves on to, here's what's wrong with what you've been told about how to eat ever since, say, the 70s.
Well, there's no question that Morgan Spurlock got 4-plus sick when he was on that McDonald's diet. I mean, it started out, pretty slim, healthy-looking individual, and then he started looking kind of green at the gills, and pretty soon he had a big overhanging belly. And right. He even went to, he went to a physician who I'm happy to be familiar with in New York, who performed tests on him. And she discovered that he had rip-roaring elevated liver function tests. He was in danger of developing fatty liver, and all kinds of medical mayhem was going to ensue. Finally, he had pulled a ripcord and tap out of the diet, and then resumed his healthy eating habits, and he was better. So what was wrong with that argument? Clearly, something was happening to him.
What was wrong with that particular part of the argument, if you remember the film, they kept blaming his liver function on all the fat he was eating. The guy was drinking a gallon of soda per day.
Right.
What was messing up
milkshakes
his liver
and
milkshakes. What was screwing up the guy's liver was this unbelievable load of fructose he was taking in every day. And they kept talking about the fat because it plays into that whole same advice we've been getting from the 70s, that it's the fat that kills you. Now, certainly trans fats could be bad for you. Industrial seed oils could be bad for you. But the reason his liver was all messed up, and I'm sure you know this, it was all the sugar.
Indeed. And it's actually been discovered, ever since, especially in more recent studies, that our substitution of good old-fashioned table sugar, sucrose, with high fructose corn syrup, which of course is cheaper because of the corn production, that's even more deadly to the liver. That your sugar itself, is pretty bad. And yeah, we shouldn't be consuming a lot of table sugar, but if you really want to do a number on your liver, consume a lot of high fructose corn syrup, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, we made the huge mistake of subsidizing the stuff, which made it dirt cheap, which led to it being in everything. You go to the store, you pull a loaf of bread off the shelf and read the ingredients, and I bet you'll find high fructose corn syrup in there.
Yeah, practically everything. The ketchup that you put on your burger, even if you throw away the bun, you're going to get a dose of high fructose corn syrup. Of course, I think our audience needs to remember that that doesn't mean don't eat any fruit. There's some people who might be very susceptible to the carbohydrates in fruit. They need to curtail excess fruit intake. But the amount of fructose in a soft drink is by many orders of magnitude greater than what you'd find in an apple.
Yeah, you'd have to eat. I don't remember the number. I looked it up once, how many apples you'd have to eat to hit your liver with the same load of fructose you'd get from one of those big gulps. And I don't remember, but it was a lot of apples.
Indeed. How do you like them apples? All right.
Right.
Ba-dum-dum. However, you are taking a very hangout view here because you are claiming, that in the words of your subtitle, the movie is called Fathead, you've been fed a load of baloney. And if you go to your webpage, which is fathead-movie.com, there's a picture of you literally with your face stuffed with bologna. Surely you can't mean that it's okay to eat a lot of processed meat. A lot of people, even dyed-in-the-wool carnivores, the paleo crowd, they say, well, the problem with the meat is it's processed. So you got to stay away from that processed stuff. What's your take on that controversy?
My take is it is always better to eat whole fresh food than processed food for all kinds of reasons. But as far as, you know, getting back to this whole WHO study, oh, the processed meat causes cancer, you should take that with a gigantic grain of salt, because the processed meat, and they constantly name bacon and sausage and et cetera, people who eat a lot of processed meat, my guess is, first off, these are strictly observational studies. They're just making associations. And my guess is that people who eat a lot of processed meat are probably people who eat a lot of processed food in general. And I doubt these are people, for the most part, who are eating their bacon and their sausage and then spending the rest of the day eating, you know, broccoli and sweet potatoes and water. I think a high intake of processed meat is probably just a marker for a lot of processed food in general. And most processed food is full of exactly the things you and I have already mentioned: high fructose corn syrup, industrial seed oils. I doubt it's the meat, even the processed meat. I doubt it's the meat giving them the cancer.
And maybe a marker also for other aspects of an unhealthy lifestyle, because I think people who indiscriminately buy cheap, poor quality meats or frequent fast food eateries, they do other stuff that's not that healthy. Maybe they exercise less. They spend more time sitting on their butts watching, you know, 24/7 sports and sitcoms. And you know, perhaps there are other aspects of their lifestyle that contribute to the statistics that show that processed meat is the problem. Processed meat may be a marker for unhealthy lifestyle. I think what you're saying. Actually, it's really interesting because you don't know this, but last week I interviewed Nina Teicholz, who's the author of The Big Fat Surprise. I think you're familiar with her because you travel in the same circles and you know, adhere to the same viewpoint when it comes to animal protein. And she made the same points about the WHO study, that it was politically motivated, that there's a mixed message there. It's fine, you know, if they want to adopt a pro-environment argument that meat is devastating to the environment. Okay, that's one thing, and that could, again, that can be challenged too, because there's some studies that suggest that you know, animal husbandry, if properly carried out, is not as deleterious to the environment as dyed-in-the-wool vegans or plant-based diet advocates argue. And she, you know, also said that, you know, the very same thing about the processed meat. The processed meat may be in and of itself not so harmful, although, again, it's preferable to minimize your intake of everything processed.
Yeah, and her book, by the way, was terrific. I actually reviewed it on the blog. I wasn't familiar with her before the book came out. I am now. You know, one thing I point out on the blog frequently is you have to understand what goes on with these observational studies. You think in your mind, take the whole population and divide them into health conscious people and then people who really don't give a darn. The health conscious people are different in all kinds of ways, and it's not just health. You're basically talking about people who think in terms of future consequences and people who don't. So the people who think in terms of future consequences, they eat better, they exercise more, they take their vitamins, they are less likely to smoke, they are less likely to eat junk food, they're more likely to go to college, they're more likely to save for their retirement. I mean, these are just people who think ahead. You can come up with all kinds of associations because of that. I guarantee you, if you gave me enough money to run the observational study, I could demonstrate that playing piano reduces your risk of heart disease.
Indeed.
Because the people who are more likely to take lessons and put in the time and play piano are the people who think in terms of what's going to be good for me in the future.
Well, it seems like you know, they talk about America as a country of a widening gulf between the haves and the have-nots. It seems the same thing is happening when it comes to health behaviors. There's more and more people who are health conscious. We're seeing gyms spring up and organic food emporia, and people are buying grass-fed meats as never before. But at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, people are doing themselves in with unhealthy diets and bad lifestyles.
And that's my concern. And I and the people who are doing themselves in, I divide them into two populations in my mind, too. some people really, truly don't care. They know this bag of chips is bad for me. They know this Coca-Cola is bad for me. They don't care. They're about immediate pleasure versus long-term circumstances. And in that case, I say we bless them and let them go on their way.
Freedom of choice.
Freedom of choice. If you want to make that decision, that's fine by me. Just don't come and expect me to pay for your health care after you screwed yourself up. The people that I feel bad for, and this is the reason I'm dedicated to the blog and the reason I made the film and the reason we're writing a book, there are a lot of people out there who are suffering negative health consequences, but they think they're doing the right thing.
Yep.
But they've been given the wrong advice.
And that's the so-called DGAs, the Dietary Guidelines for America, which are now up for a review in 2015. And there's a big firestorm of controversy about them because they're still not getting with the new findings that suggest that saturated fat may not be all it's cracked up to be.
Right. And I fully expected that. People have been asking me for years, how do we get the Dietary Guidelines Committee to change their minds? And my answer has always been, they're not going to. If so, what they will do is they will back away one tiny step at a time, which incidentally they did. They finally said cholesterol is not a nutrient of concern. That undoes what they've been told, you know, been telling us for 35 years. That's the way they will do it. By the time they back away from all the advice, you and I will be dead and our kids will be old. So I'm not waiting for them to change their minds. What I am all about is getting people to ignore them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We often we emulate Scandinavia as a progressive country, you know, an ideal society. And actually, Sweden, I believe it is, has broken away from this dietary dogma and is now advocating a more high-fat, low-carb dietary recommendation as its national policy, from what I understand.
Yeah, but I mean, it took a major controversy in Sweden to make that happen. I'm actually friends with people from Sweden who witnessed that whole thing. And you probably know the story, but basically some dietitians went after a doctor who was successfully treating diabetics with a low-carb diet. They tried to take her medical license away.
I didn't even know that.
And yeah, and I've met her. She's a really nice, diminutive woman. But she basically said, okay, if you want to have a fight, let's have a fight. And that fight took place on national TV in Sweden. And she basically came in and beat them to death with the actual science.
Well, in
and
a country
because this was televised
in a country the size million. Of yeah, in a country probably the size of metropolitan, you know, New York or Chicago, that's
exactly.
Doable. You can flip the switch, but it's a little harder to change paradigms in a big unwieldy country like America.
Absolutely, and especially in a country where our government is subsidizing the wrong foods.
Yeah, I mean, so in your movie, you know, specifically. What will listeners find? I mean, what you know, it's a little bit tongue in cheek. It's a little bit, you know, there's some shock value to some of the footage in the movie. You also have mustered a pretty impressive roster of experts to talk about the subject.
In the film, once you get past the part where I show, you know, what's wrong with Supersize Me, a lot of what Morgan Spurlock did was entertaining but ultimately dishonest. So I bring that out. And then in an amusing way, I show where our current dietary advice came from, how it was based largely on politics and not on real science. And then I show kind of, you know, where it's taken us, how we have kids with type 2 diabetes now. You know, to the point where we had to rename it from adult onset diabetes to type 2 diabetes. And then I kind of show how even eating fast food, and I am not telling people to live on fast food, and I made that clear in Fathead. I demonstrated that even living on an all fast food diet, by limiting the refined carbs, embracing the saturated fat, I could actually lose weight and improve my health.
You see, you're a little bit, Fathead is a little bit like... like the Subway guy, except the Subway guy throwing away the bread, losing weight. What was his name? The guy who just indicted on
Jared,
who is now descended into infamy because of the sex charges that he's associated with. But the notion is that at least, and I think you did this, probably did this for the shock value, not to advocate that people. You know, go to McDonald's and throw away the bun and just, you know, eat the burgers and eat the, you know, eat the processed meats. But as a kind of a thought experiment to show that really when it comes to optimizing our weight, reducing our risk of diabetes, even improving our lipids, that it's not the processed meat that's the culprit.
Well, and like I said, I said very clearly, I don't recommend that people live on fast food. A fast food diet is not a good diet. Despite me saying that clearly, there are, you know, people who accuse me of telling everyone to live on fast food, which I didn't. But, you know, I also, I want to live in the real world. And I've talked to people before about, you know, you have to avoid making perfect the enemy of good. You and I can tell people don't eat fast food, cook everything at home, use nothing but whole fresh ingredients, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, that would be great. But come on, we live in the real world. There's an awful lot of people who are going to, however many times a week, for convenience reasons, they're going to stop at the Golden Arches or somewhere else and buy the fast food. So in Fathead, what I was showing them, at least if you know the right information, you can at least make a better choice at a fast food restaurant. It's not going to be the perfect choice, but it could be the better choice than going in there and getting the French fries, the Coke, and eating all that white bread.
Indeed. All right, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And our subject today is the movie Fathead. We're talking to the writer and producer of Fathead. He's Tom Naughton. And the website is fathead-movie.com. And there you can learn about how you can access the movie. And also, he has a very interesting blog. And in part two, I want to talk about where you're going with this, because you're remaining active on the food front. And you got a book in the works, Tom. And we'll talk a little bit about that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.